horizontal blue light becomes two solid lines. Warner Soga Films. Dimension Films presents Nicole Kidman in The Others. A pencil drawing on yellowed paper shows a girl and a boy on an empty shore watching the sun rise.
Now, children, are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. This story started many thousands of years ago, but it was all over in just 7 days. All that long, long time ago, none of the things we can see now, the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth, the animals and plants, not a single one existed. Only God existed, and so only he could have created them, and he did.
A series of drawings follow. Two small children peering through banisters into a dark stairwell. Fionnuala Flanagan, Christopher Eccleston, Alekina Mann, James Bentley. The boy playing with a toy train. The girl talking to a stout woman in Victorian dress who sits by a large fireplace. Eric Sykes, Elaine Cassidy, Keith Allen, Renee Asherson, Michelle Fairley. A lighted candle in a woman's hand, her other hand putting a key to the lock of a closed door. Casting Gina Jay, Shaheen Baig. Costume design Sonia Grande. Sound Ricardo Steinberg. Music Alejandro Amenábar. The young girl, wide-eyed, pointing up a flight of stairs. Production design Benjamin Fernandez. A man's shadow, his hand reaching down towards a terrified boy who is curled up in bed. Executive producers Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner. A woman's hand dangling the string puppet of a little angel girl, its arm trapped in the strings, its head lolling. Written and directed by Alejandro Amenábar. A large Victorian house wreathed in morning mist. The drawing dissolves into the actual location. Jersey, the Channel Islands, 1945. A pale young woman lying in bed awakes. Her hands cover her mouth. Her blonde head is pressed into her pillow. She gazes unseeing in front of her. She sneaks a glance around the room, shuts her eyes, briefly shakes her head, takes in her surroundings. The room is in daylight. She grabs a watch from a bedside table, sees the time, presses her face into the pillow, replaces the watch. She's wearing a white nightgown. She raises herself slowly and sits unsteadily on the edge of the bed. In the mist, three figures walk towards the house. A white-haired man, a stout woman in a shawl, and a teenage girl with long hair tied back.
I imagine he's dead like all the rest.
Ah, those were the days.
They walk up to double doors at the entrance. The older woman pulls at a bell rope. She wears a long black dress. The girl, a long dark skirt and brown jacket.
Mr. Tuttle, your hair.
He smooths it down. Their clothes have a dated look. The door opens, and the pale blonde woman peers out at them.
Yes?
Good morning, ma'am. We've come about this...
Oh, yes, of course.
The older woman glances at the others.
Come in.
The pale young woman is tall and slim.
I wasn't expecting you so soon.
The older woman nods uncertainly and enters into a large entrance hall, followed by the others. They stand meekly in line.
You are...
I'm Bertha Mills, ma'am. And this is Edmund Tuttle.
Pleased to meet you, ma'am.
You must be the gardener.
Ah, that's right, the gardener.
And this young lady is called Lydia.
Lydia keeps her head lowered.
Have you had much experience in service?
Oh, don't let that angel face fool you, ma'am. She's older than she looks.
Can you iron?
Lydia, who looks about 16, nods hesitantly.
What's the matter? Has the cat got your tongue?
She can't talk, ma'am. Poor little mite's a mute. Oh, but she's a good little worker. I can promise you that.
All right. All right, the other girl I had spoke too much anyway. Follow me. Mrs. Mills, you and the girl, you will sleep in the attic room at the top of the stairs. And you, Mr...
Tuttle, ma'am.
Tuttle. You could sleep in the shed around the back.
Mrs. Mills notices dust.
As you can see, the housework has been rather neglected since the servants disappeared almost a week ago.
You mean they just vanished?
Into the net.
They follow her down a passage.
No notice, nothing. They didn't even collect their wages. They just left us.
What a strange thing to do.
She unlocks a door.
You'll soon find out there are times when this house is not exactly an ideal home. Hence my advertisement in the newspaper requesting honest, hard-working people.
She ushers them in.
Well, there's nobody more honest or hard-working than us. Isn't that right, Mr. Tuttle?
Oh, aye, we're very honest. And, very hard-working.
She glances sharply at him and locks the door behind her.
The kitchen. I have breakfast at 8. The children at 9. Lunch will be served at 1 and dinner at 7:30.
The master, ma'am.
About to unlock a further door, the woman turns hesitantly to face them.
The master went off to war. A year and a half ago. I've had no news since the war ended. Which of you does the cooking?
I'm so sorry, ma'am.
Which of you does the cooking?
In another room.
You all notice what I'm doing. In this house, no door must be opened without the previous one being closed first. It is vital that you remember this. It's not as easy as it may seem. There are 15 different keys for all of the 50 doors, depending on which area of the house you're in at the time. Mrs. Mills, from tomorrow onwards, I will be leaving a set of keys in your charge.
Yes, ma'am.
The music room. That old piano was already here when we moved in. Please do not let the children thump away on it. It sets off my migraine. Silence is something that we prize very highly in this house. That is why you will not find a telephone, a radio, or anything else that makes a racket. Oh, we don't have electricity either. During the war, the Germans kept cutting it off, so we just learned to live without it. Let's continue.
Ma'am, there's really no need to show us around the whole house.
Yes! Yes, there is. Because here, most of the time, you can hardly see your way. It's often difficult to make out if there is a table, a chair, a door, a sideboard, or one of my children playing hide-and-seek.
What do you mean, ma'am?
Perhaps I should introduce you to the children.
They go through an arched double door into the hall. There's a stained glass panel to the left, heavily curtained windows to the right.
Mr. Tuttle, you can see to the garden now. You'll find tools in the shed.
Yes, ma'am.
You two could start closing the curtains.
She locks the door behind her.
All of them.
Mrs. Mills and Lydia each hurry to separate windows and tug the heavy curtains closed. They move down the hall to see to the other windows as the woman goes to a lamp and lights it. The room is now in complete darkness apart from the single flickering lamp. The woman adjusts the flame to burn more steadily. She climbs a wide wooden staircase and glances back at the others.
Come.
The two women follow her nervously into the dark. She leads them down a gloomy passage and halts at a heavy wooden door, key in hand. She turns to them.
I'll wake them. You wait here. Whatever you do, don't open the curtains.
The woman disappears into the room.
Wakey, wakey. Now, come on. Eyes closed, hands together.
Let it be the light of day, Jesus, to whom now I may pray. Let it be the Virgin pure, whom my grateful face is sure.
A girl of about 9 and a boy of about 7 emerge out of the blackness in night clothes. The boy rubs his eye.
They're still half asleep.
What sweet little children.
Well, what do you say?
How do you do? How do you do?
How do you do, children? My name is Mrs. Mills, but you can call me Bertha, if you like. What are your names?
Anne. Nicholas.
Anne and Nicholas. What pretty names.
Are you going to be our new nanny?
The woman nods discreetly at Mrs. Mills.
Yes, my dears. I'm your new nanny.
It's time for their breakfast. Lydia, go to the kitchen and close every shutter.
The woman hands her bunch of keys and the lamp to Lydia, who shyly turns and goes, leaving them in darkness. The woman lights another lamp.
The doctors were never able to find a cure.
For what?
Their condition. Children have a very serious allergy to light. They are photosensitive and they must never be exposed to any light much stronger than this.
She picks up the softly glowing lamp.
Otherwise, in a matter of minutes, they would break out in sores and blisters and begin to suffocate. It would eventually be fatal.
Good heavens.
The children eat breakfast at the kitchen table.
I don't like this toast.
Oh, why not?
It tastes funny. I liked it better before.
That's because before, somebody else made it.
When are they coming back?
Mrs. Mills caresses Anne's blonde head.
They're not coming back, child.
Just like Daddy. Daddy is coming back, though. Mrs. Mills, our father's fighting in a war in France, you know.
It's the World War.
I know, but he's in France.
That's enough, chatterboxes. Finish up your breakfasts.
Are you going to leave us too?
Of course not. Why should I leave you?
The others said they wouldn't, but they did. And then it happened.
Be quiet.
Anne looks down into her breakfast bowl.
What do you mean, Anne? What happened?
Mummy went mad. Nothing happened.
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't!
Yes, it did!
Be quiet!
The woman emerges from shadows in a corner of the kitchen.
What's going on? I want to see those plates empty in less than a minute. Is that clear?
Nicholas picks up his spoon, glancing at Anne, who nods.
Mrs. Mills, would you come outside a moment? I'd like a word with you.
The woman takes out her keys and leaves.
Yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Mills follows. In a gloomy passage, the woman draws a curtain to let light in.
Postman usually comes every Wednesday. But I just checked the letterbox, and this week he hasn't.
I'm afraid I don't follow, ma'am.
This letter should have been collected and delivered to the newspaper 5 days ago. It's an advertisement for servants. Since it was never published, would you mind explaining to me what you're doing here?
Oh, I understand. Well, ma'am, that's exactly what I was going to say to you when you opened the door to us. The truth is that we just come by on the off chance. You know, a big house like this is always in need of someone who knows the ropes.
You mean you served in a house like this one before?
This may come as a surprise to you, ma'am, but we, in fact, used to work here.
Here?
Oh, now, it was a few years ago.
Mrs. Mills lowers her eyes shyly.
If you don't mind my saying so, ma'am, they were the best years of my life. That's why we come by, because this house means a lot to us. Perhaps I'd best show you our references, ma'am.
No, no, no. Don't bother. There's no need. So you say you know the house well?
Like the back of my hand. Well, that is always assuming that the walls haven't sprouted legs and moved in the meantime.
The only thing that moves here is the light.
The woman glances around wearily.
But it changes everything.
She looks at Mrs. Mills and their eyes meet for a moment, then she turns to close the curtain.
It's rather difficult, to say the least. One might almost say unbearable.
The passage is now in darkness, lit only by an oil lamp.
The only way of enduring it is by keeping a cool head.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
I don't like fantasies. Strange ideas, do you know what I mean?
I think so, ma'am.
My children sometimes have strange ideas.
Mrs. Mills looks apprehensive.
But you mustn't pay any attention to them. Children will be children.
Yes, of course, ma'am.
All right.
The woman smiles kindly at her.
You can stay.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Mrs. Mills stands thoughtfully for a moment, watching her go, then moves off into the dark. She enters a gloomy kitchen, smiling at Anne, who is at the table.
It did happen.
Mrs. Mills' smile fades. Outside, in a grey mist, Mr. Tuttle sweeps leaves. Inside, by lamplight, Anne and Nicholas sit at a table with their mother reading.
The Roman governor tried to make them change their minds afterwards.
To make them change their minds, full stop.
Afterwards. He ordered them to be beaten, but justice and pastor, far from being afraid, rejoiced and showed themselves willing to die for Christ. When he saw this, the Roman governor was filled with rage and ordered their heads to be cut off.
Their mother looks up sharply.
What do you find so amusing?
Well?
Well, what?
Those children were really stupid.
Why?
Because they said they only believed in Jesus and then they got killed for it.
And what would you have done, deny Christ?
Well, yes. Inside, I would have believed in him, but I wouldn't have told the Romans that.
Her mother frowns slightly, then looks at Nicholas.
Is that what you think too, Nicholas?
The pale-faced boy looks down, then nods at her solemnly.
I see. So you both would have lied to the point of denying Christ. Oh, you'd have saved your heads being chopped off by the Romans, that's true. But what would have happened afterwards?
When?
In the next life. The one that's waiting for us after we die, where would you have gone?
Oh.
Where, Nicholas?
To the children's limbo.
What is the children's limbo, Anne?
One of the four hells.
Which are?
She looks at Nicholas. He looks away, uncertain. Anne puts her hand up.
Me.
No. Let him answer. Which are?
There's the hell where the damned go. Then there's purgatory.
Yes.
And the bosom of Abraham, yes, where the just go, and limbo where children go.
At the centre of the earth, where it's very, very hot. That's where children go who tell lies, but they don't just go there for a few days. Oh, no. No, they're damned. Forever. Think about it.
Nicholas blinks thoughtfully.
Try to imagine the end of eternity. Close your eyes. Close your eyes and try to imagine it.
Nicholas screws his eyes tight shut.
Forever. Pain. Forever.
I'm getting dizzy.
Now do you understand why Justice and Pastor told the truth?
Nicholas nods with a serious expression. Anne nods too.
Right. Open your readers at lesson 6.
Can we go and play?
You most certainly cannot. First you're going to read the lesson, and then you're going to learn it by heart.
All of it?
Anne, any more protests and there'll be no playing for you at all today. Hmm? In fact, I think you can study in separate rooms.
No.
Yes.
We get scared if we're separated.
You get scared? As if you weren't used to this house by now.
What if we see a ghost?
Has your sister been telling you one of her stories?
I haven't told him anything.
Well, if you see a ghost, you say hello and you continue on studying. Anne, come with me to the music room.
Why me?
Because I say so. Now, come on. Take your book. Nicholas, I want to see that lesson learned in less than an hour.
Mummy.
What?
Give me a kiss. Give me a kiss.
Anne, wait for me outside.
You know I can't.
Their mother unlocks the door, moving Anne away.
Over there.
Mrs. Mills is in the next room, filling a lamp.
Mrs. Mills, close all the curtains. My daughter is going to cross the living room.
Yes, ma'am.
The woman waits till Mrs. Mills has left the darkened room, then opens the door to the children.
All right, Anne.
Anne leaves the room, Nicholas still at the table, looks up anxiously.
Darling.
She closes the door behind her.
Mummy can't be with you all the time.
She kneels down to him.
You must learn to be on your own.
She lays her hand on his shoulder.
Where's your rosary?
He pulls a rosary from his pocket. She presses it into his hand.
Whenever you feel afraid, I want you to squeeze it with all your might and say, "And our Father," and then your fear.
It won't.
Yes, it will, honestly. Don't you see that when you do that, the Lord is with you?
She strokes his face with her finger.
There's no reason to be afraid.
He nods but does not look at her. She kisses his forehead, squeezes his hand, smiles and goes to the door. As she opens it, she blows him a kiss. He looks at her forlornly. The door closes, leaving the little boy alone in the darkened room, lit only by a dim lamp. He looks around the room uneasily. He slowly peers behind him with a fearful frown, turns back to his open book and half-heartedly squeezes the rosary. His eyes move across the yellow page to a drawing of a man and woman relaxing at home, their two small children playing on the floor beside them.
The house and the family. We all live in a house with our family. The family is usually made up of parents, children and their grandparents. We must be obedient and kind
towards other members of our family.
Anne in the music room.
And we must never argue or fight with our brothers and sisters.
In the hall with Mrs. Mills.
Do you have any children?
No. Mr. Tuttle and the girl, Lydia, are all I've got, and I'm all they've got.
Was she born like that?
Mrs. Mills looks up from an oil lamp.
Beg your pardon, ma'am.
The girl. Was she born a mute?
No.
Mrs. Mills picks up her canister of oil.
No, I think I've finished here, ma'am. If you'll excuse me, I think I'll go and see if Mr. Tuttle needs a hand.
The woman has been watching Mr. Tuttle through a hall window. He is still clearing leaves. As Mrs. Mills goes out, the woman turns and walks aimlessly towards the sofa. She stands listlessly and glances about her and looks at her wristwatch, peering at the dial. She drops her hand again with quiet exasperation. She takes a few more ambling steps, then stops to listen, her eyes widening with alarm.
Nicholas!
She rushes across the hall towards the door and frantically selects a key to unlock it.
Nicholas, I'm coming!
She pushes the door open and runs to Nicholas's door, but then has to turn back to close the first door.
Nicholas!
What's the matter?
Why were you crying?
I wasn't crying, I was reading.
But I just heard you. Anne.
She runs back through the hall and along a gloomy passage, selecting the key of the music room. Anne is lying in front of a log fire, calmly reading.
Anne! I haven't learned it yet, Mummy.
Are you all right?
Yes.
Why were you crying?
I wasn't crying.
But I just heard you a moment ago.
Anne glances down at her book.
There's no need to feel ashamed, darling.
I don't. If I'd been crying, I'd tell you.
Oh, really? So I imagined it, did I?
No, it was that boy.
Anne studies her book.
What boy?
Victor.
Who's Victor?
Anne looks up at her.
The boy that was here a moment ago. I told him to let me study, but he wouldn't stop crying. I think he's a spoiled brat. He said we'd have to leave the house.
Oh, did he now? Why was he crying?
Because he doesn't like this house, but he has to live here. His father's a pianist.
Oh,
and
his father's a pianist, is he?
Yes. And I've already told him he is not allowed to touch the piano. He isn't, is he, Mummy?
Her mother closes the piano lid.
So you've spoken to his father as well?
No, only with Victor. His father's with the others in the hall.
But I've just come from the hall. There's no one there.
Anne glances down, pondering.
They must have gone upstairs. They're viewing the house.
That'll do, Anne. That's enough. Now, why were you crying?
It was Victor.
So where is he now?
He went out through there.
Would you mind telling me how a boy can get in and out of this room if it's locked?
She points at the other door in the room. It stands ajar. In the library with Mrs. Mills and Lydia.
I thought I made myself quite clear. No door is to be opened without the previous one being closed first. Is that so hard to understand? This house is like a ship. The light must be contained as if it were water by opening and closing the doors. My children's lives are at stake.
But, Mum, I...
Do not argue with me. Be quiet. Now, which was the last of you to enter that room? Lydia?
Lydia shakes her bowed head.
She hasn't got a key. I already told you that.
Well, that leaves you then.
But I was in the hall the whole time. And then I went out into the garden. You saw me with your own eyes.
I hope you are not suggesting that it was me. Do you think that I would overlook such a thing and endanger the life of my own daughter?
Mrs. Mills and Lydia glance at each other. At a large dining table, Anne and Nicholas eat soup by candlelight. Anne studies a book.
You're not supposed to read at the table. Oh, really? And who's going to tell Mummy? You?
Lydia is sitting in the corner. Anne turns to her.
Or perhaps you.
Lydia bows her head. Nicholas stares thoughtfully at his sister.
Did you really see a boy?
Anne puts her book down.
Yes, he's called Victor.
Nicholas frowns anxiously.
Is he a ghost?
Don't be stupid. Ghosts aren't like that.
What are they like?
I've told you a thousand times. They go about in white sheets and carry chains.
How do you know?
Because I've seen them. They come out at night.
Fibber, where?
She sees something behind him and points. He turns. There's nothing there.
You're stupid.
Not half as much as you.
Well, I don't believe you saw that boy.
Believe what you like. You'll soon be begging us to play with you.
Dead of night. Mist rises from the lake outside. The house is in total darkness. Nicholas is asleep in bed. A small hand grips his shoulder.
Nicholas. What?
Look. Anne points at the window as he sits up.
Why have you opened the curtains?
It wasn't me.
Who was it then?
It was Victor. He's been doing it all night.
You're lying. Don't you tell Mummy?
So I'm a liar, am I?
Yes.
Victor, come out from behind that curtain so my stupid brother can see you.
Nicholas stares at a curtain hanging in a dark corner of the room. He sees nothing. He buries his head in the pillow.
Leave me alone.
So you don't want to see him now, eh? You're a cowdy custard. Cowdy, cowdy custard. Cowdy, cowdy custard.
His eyes gape, sheet pulled up to his chin.
Oh, I'll just have to do myself then.
She strides towards the windows. He keeps his back to the room, eyes blinking fearfully. She pulls the curtains too. The room goes black. The curtains open.
That's enough, Victor.
Anne leaps onto the bed and shakes her brother's shoulder.
Nicholas, Nicholas, tell him to leave the curtains alone. You won't listen to me. Stop it. Get off that bed, both of you. This is our bed. No, it's mine.
Anne, please stop putting on that voice.
You be quiet, cowardly custard. Listen, if you don't stop, I'll call my mother and she'll kick you out. You don't know my mother. And you don't know my parents.
Anne, I'm going to tell Mummy about you.
Don't be stupid, can't you say it's not me?
She speaks into the darkness.
Victor, touch his cheek, though I know it's your real.
Nicholas shrinks into his pillow, closing his eyes tight shut. A small hand reaches towards his cheek. Their mother runs, startled from her bedroom and down the passage towards the noise. She unlocks their door, fumbling with the keys.
What is it? What is it? What is it?
She was hiding in me and I told her to be quiet.
I'm fed up, do you hear me? I am fed up with you!
I didn't do anything!
Her mother looks defiantly at her. Anne in the hall, fully dressed.
Therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. There, I finished.
Her mother embroiders by lamplight.
Very good.
She goes to Anne, who is standing in the middle of the room.
Now you can ask the Virgin for forgiveness.
What? That's not what we agreed.
We didn't agree anything, young lady. Today you're being punished, and you'll do as I say.
You can't make me ask the Virgin for forgiveness.
How dare you?
Mummy, I won't ask forgiveness for something I didn't do.
You told your brother that there was someone else in the room.
There was.
You're lying.
I am not.
Her mother turns away.
Anne.
She faces her daughter again.
Anne, do you remember the story about Justice and Pastor? Children who don't tell the truth end up in limbo.
That's what you say. But I read the other day that limbo's only for children who haven't been baptised.
Her mother stares at her.
And I have.
Fog envelops the house. Anne sits at the top of the stairs, reading.
Burnt offering, and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand.
Mrs. Mills enters the gloomy passage from the kitchen. She's carrying a tray of tea things. As she enters the hallway, she looks up at Anne. And he... Mrs. Mills continues to look up at the child as she walks across the hall. Anne stares down at her sullenly. Anne's mother embroiders as Mrs. Mills pours tea.
Did you look in on Nicholas?
Yes, ma'am. The little angel is fast asleep.
What about Anne? Is she still on the stairs?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Mills brings the tea over.
I prefer to have her where I can see her, but I can't embroider in such poor light.
Mrs. Mills puts the cup down and stands beside her hesitantly.
How long is this punishment going to go on? It's been 3 days now.
It's up to her.
The woman looks Mrs. Mills steadily in the eye.
She's got to learn to swallow her pride and ask for forgiveness. Anyway, it's about time she started to read the Bible.
Well, the priest will be very pleased to hear that, ma'am.
If he ever deigns to pay us another visit. He knows perfectly well that the children can't go out.
Oh, he told me yesterday he'd be by as soon as possible.
I'm beginning to feel totally cut off from the world.
Mrs. Mills is peering out of one of the windows.
This fog doesn't exactly help. It's never lasted this long before.
Oh, that's true, ma'am.
Even the seagulls have gone quiet.
She looks up from her sewing, suddenly anxious.
Anne! Anne, I can't hear you!
She pricks her finger.
Incidentally, Mrs. Mills, I've had to put up with the noise of Lydia running around above my head. She's been hurtling backwards and forwards as if there were three of her. Would you kindly tell her it's not necessary to kick up quite such a rumpus just to do a little cleaning?
Mrs. Mills looks puzzled.
I couldn't bear to get another migraine attack.
I'll tell her.
Thank you.
Mrs. Mills nods graciously and leaves. The woman sits alone beneath a large crystal chandelier, concentrating on her embroidery. The cup of tea remains untouched on the elegant wooden table beside her armchair. She gives a little shake of her head at the noise from the room above and continues sewing, gazing closely at her embroidery hoop to focus on the delicate stitching. She throws back her head and shuts her eyes, then resumes sewing. She looks up at the ceiling with alarm. The chandelier begins to vibrate with the movement above. She puts down her sewing.
Now she's really gone too far. Lydia! Lydia!
She stands and walks towards the window, puzzled as she sees Mrs. Mills in the garden talking to Lydia. Mrs. Mills points at the upstairs room. Lydia shakes her head. The woman turns and casts a fearful glance at the ceiling. She enters the gloomy hall and goes to the stairs.
The mouth of the Lord shall be seen, and the angel of the
Lord... What's going on up there?
Nothing, Mummy. I'm just reading like you told me.
Did you hear it as well?
Hear what?
Anne is standing on the top step. Her mother approaches her, glancing into the shadows with trepidation.
And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and said, By myself I have sworn, saith the Lord.
Shh!
She holds out a hand, listens intently, then peers into the darkness of the upper landing. Seeing nothing, she turns back to Anne.
What was that?
I don't know.
Anne, tell me who's making that noise.
I can't tell you, Mummy.
You tell me.
I told you there was someone in the room, and you punished me. Now I don't know what to say.
Anne, I want the truth.
She holds Anne's head and looks her in the eye. Anne holds her mother's gaze, then points.
There, in that junk room.
The woman turns slowly to look across the landing to where Anne has pointed. Light seeps round the edges of the closed junk room door, keeping her eyes on it the whole time she moves past her daughter, up the final flight of stairs, and walks along the dim landing towards the door. The daylight outlining the door is bright compared to the darkness of the landing. The woman's face is taut with apprehension, lips slightly parted, eyes fixed on the door. She puts a hand on the doorknob and pauses momentarily to listen. She pushes the door ajar. Daylight spills across her pale face.
Mummy, you're letting the light in.
Anne retreats from the glare. The woman pulls the door shut, hesitates, then opens it just far enough for her to slip through. She's in a room full of large objects draped in white sheets. She moves forward cautiously. She peers around with darting eyes. Daylight from a large leaded window casts ghostly grey shadows on the white drapes. Her forehead glistens. She halts and stares around her, wide-eyed. Her mouth gapes. She blinks and listens intently. Her eyes widen with alarm. She swivels slowly, glancing fearfully into every shadow-filled corner. She can hear the voices but cannot see anyone. She panics and turns. She backs into something. A hand under a sheet. She pulls the sheet away. A painted wooden effigy. She pulls other sheets away. A coat stand. A chair on a table. A mirror. She sees the reflection of the junk room door, which is slowly closing. She runs to pull it open, re-emerging onto the dark landing.
Where did they go?
They just came past here. Didn't you see them?
But where did they go?
Over there. Oh, and down there as well.
The woman looks round her frenziedly. She runs past Anne and down the stairs.
They're everywhere. They say this house is theirs.
She peers into the darkness.
And they say they're going to take the curtains down as well.
Later, with Mrs. Mills and the children.
Ma'am, stay calm, please.
I will not stay calm. For 5 whole years during the occupation, I managed to avoid a single Nazi ever stepping foot in this house, and now there is someone here. Under my nose, opening and closing the doors.
Ma'am, this is a very old house. Why, the floorboards squeak and the plumbing clanks.
There were voices, I'm telling you.
Mummy,
look. A boy and two women, and they're talking together.
Mummy, look!
Anne unfolds a pencil drawing of four people.
I did it yesterday. This is the father, this is the mother. This is Victor, and this is the old woman.
What do these numbers stand for?
That's the number of times I've seen them.
Seen the old woman the most.
Next to a scowling face with blank eyes is the number 14. The woman puts her hand to her mouth.
God in heaven. Mrs. Mills, go and call Mr. Tuttle. Tell him that we have to search the whole house immediately. Before it gets dark.
Yes, ma'am, there.
Mummy!
Yes, darling. It's all right. Nothing's going to happen to you while Mummy's here.
Look, Mummy. She really scares me. It's as if she's not looking at you, but she can see you. And she's always around, saying, come with me.
Oh, Anne, don't lie to me.
Honestly, Mummy. And she asks me things. Victor told me she's a witch.
What does she ask you?
Things.
The woman studies her daughter's face. Anne frowns.
The breast smells.
In the hall, the woman loads a shotgun.
We have to open all the curtains. I don't want any dark corners where someone could hide.
Yes, ma'am.
You both search the right side, and I'll take the left. And then we'll search upstairs.
The woman looks unsure for a moment, then resolutely moves away. The woman, shotgun in hand, flings curtains aside in the music room. Mr. Tuttle and Lydia are in other rooms and passages, raising blinds, letting the light in. The playroom, the study, the kitchen, the hall with its stained glass window. In a darkened room, the woman sets down an oil lamp. She nervously backs away to pull open a curtain. A ghostly ashen face can be glimpsed in the darkness. She has not noticed it. The light reveals a man in 17th century clothes. A painting hanging on the wall. The woman glances around her, shotgun at the ready. She allows her eyes to close for a moment. She begins to relax and notices something on the floor, an old framed photograph. She wipes the dust away. It shows a group of Victorian men and women in the garden, the house in the background. In another room, Anne holds a stringed puppet.
Perhaps they're ghosts who lived in this house before.
Don't be stupid, I've already told you. Ghosts go about in white sheets and carry chains and go...
Now, Anne... Why do you make up such stories?
I don't. I read them in books.
Well, you shouldn't believe everything that you read in books.
That's what our mother says. She says that all this stuff about ghosts is rubbish. And then she expects us to believe everything written in the Bible.
And don't you believe it?
I believe some things. But, for example, I don't believe that God made the world in 7 days. And I don't believe that Noah got all those animals into one boat. Or the Holy Spirit is a dove.
No, I don't believe that either.
Doves are anything but holy.
They poo on our windows.
Mrs. Mills' affectionate smile slowly fades as she looks at the children thoughtfully.
Have you mentioned any of this to your mother?
They quickly shake their heads. Anne stares at her angel puppet. Back in the other room, their mother is sorting through old photos, picking them out of a folder one by one to compare to Anne's drawing. One photo shows a seated man and woman, each with a small child on their lap. The next, a large group of people under trees, a wedding portrait, bride and groom at the centre. Another shows four adults and an older child holding a baby in her arms. The woman puts the photo back and notices a small leather-bound album behind the folder. She reaches for the album and sets it down. She carefully releases its ornate metal clasps. She opens the album and sees a photo of a woman slumped in a rocking chair, high collar, black dress, ashen-faced, eyes shut, mouth agape. The next page shows a bearded man laid out on a bed, fully clothed, a document clasped in stiff hands. Then a mother and child on a bed, both smartly dressed, seemingly deep asleep. Then a tiny baby in a pram.
Butler!
Mrs. Mills is at the open door.
Yes.
The woman shuts the album.
They've searched everywhere, ma'am. There's no one.
I see.
Mrs. Mills turns to go. The woman picks up the album.
Mrs. Mills?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any idea what this might be?
Oh, it is a photograph album, ma'am.
No, but look, they're all asleep.
Look. They're not asleep, ma'am. They're dead.
The woman looks askance at her.
It is a book of the dead. In the last century, I believe they used to take photographs of the dead in the hopes that their souls would... go on living through the portraits.
group portraits. Hmm. And children. Oh, it's macabre. How could these people be so superstitious?
Grief over the death of a loved one can lead people to do the strangest things.
Get rid of it. I don't want it in the house.
Yes, ma'am.
In the hall, the woman is leaning forward in a large leather armchair next to a log fire, fingering a pendant on a chain at her neck. The double-barreled shotgun is propped beside her. She turns to Mrs. Mills, who is sitting at the far end of the room.
Mrs. Mills, it's cold. Why don't you come and sit by the fire?
Mrs. Mills gets up and approaches her mistress. She slowly eases herself into a smaller armchair and stretches her hands, palms spread, towards the heat of the fire. She nods at the woman and smiles somewhat shyly.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
So, tell me about when you worked here before. Did you have to look after children then as well?
No, I was in charge of organising the housework.
Mm. Were there many servants?
Oh, about 15. Though in the end, there were just the three of us left.
Why?
My employers moved to London. They came here less and less, it being so out of the way like. So gradually the house just became empty.
Everybody ends up leaving this damned island. My family left in the summer of 1940, just before the invasion. That was the last I ever heard of them.
Oh.
I don't blame them.
Actually, we left too. Although, you know, sometimes when you leave a place, it's like it's there with you all the time. I always felt like I never left this house.
Why did you leave?
Oh, it was on account of the tuberculosis. The whole area was evacuated.
Was that when Lydia went dumb?
Yes, I think so. So, you know, my memory's a bit rusty these days, ma'am.
What happened to her?
The woman looks directly at Mrs. Mills, whose warm smile freezes. The woman tilts her head inquiringly.
Suddenly one day, she just stopped talking.
Well, there must have been a reason. People don't just stop talking. These things are always the result of some sort of trauma. Something must have happened to her.
The woman looks away pensively.
Did your employers treat you well?
Oh, they were always very kind to us. They treated us just like family.
Mrs. Mills smiles at the woman, who is deep in thought.
You know, ma'am, I think I will go to bed. I'll never be able to get up in the morning.
Off you go. I'm going to stay here a while longer.
Yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Mills rises, inclines her head with a gracious smile, and slowly walks away into the darkness of the hall. The woman quietly watches her, distractedly scratching the back of her hand with a finger. Mrs. Mills makes her slow way up a gloomy, narrow staircase to the attic. The woman is in the children's bedroom. She sits on Anne's side of the bed, touches the sleeping child's head, and gently lays her cheek on her daughter's shoulder. She caresses her daughter's hand.
I'm sorry I was so hard on you.
She strokes her daughter's cheek. Anne's eyes remain shut.
Can you forgive me?
The woman gazes lovingly at her daughter's sleeping face. She softly kisses Anne's cheek, gently caresses her arm. Then moves away from the bed. Her daughter's hand twitches. She peeks at her mother through half-closed eyelids. From the other side of the bed, Nicholas sees his mother at the open door.
Mummy.
What?
When's Daddy coming home?
When the war's over.
Why did he go to war? I mean, nobody's done anything bad to us.
She sits on the bed beside him.
Daddy went.
She strokes his head with increasing agitation.
Daddy went because he's very brave. And because he wasn't prepared to let the Germans tell him what he had to do.
She fights back tears.
Why?
She turns her face away and shuts her eyes, unable to answer. She sits on her bedroom floor in her dressing gown, distressed, hugging herself.
Yeah.
She looks up in puzzlement. Her hand goes to her mouth. Alarmed, she sits up. She emerges onto the dark landing, oil lamp in one hand, shotgun in the other. Her dark dressing gown is open, revealing a white nightdress, buttoned to the neck, loosely tied at the hips with a belt. She creeps down the stairs to the hall, peering into the darkness below with wide, frightened eyes, her bob of blonde hair wild and tousled. Crossing the hall, she passes a stained glass panel on her right and approaches the double door of the music room. She sets down the oil lamp on a table next to the door and holds her shotgun at the ready. Closing in on the door, she slowly stretches out her fingers to the handle. She pushes the door ajar. It swings open to reveal the grand piano in the dimly lit room. There is no one at the piano stool. Holding her shotgun in front of her, she moves forward into the room, looking quickly behind the open door and then around the room. She turns again to the door, alarmed to see it swinging shut of its own accord. She turns back to look round the room. With a determined look, she rushes to the piano and closes the lid, locking it shut. She backs away from the piano into the middle of the room, slipping the piano key into her dressing gown pocket, swiveling to look around her. She opens the door again. As she moves into the hall, she turns to see the door swinging shut behind her. She hesitates a moment, then reaches for the handle. She pushes the door ajar, then pulls it back a little way, peering at the movement of the hinges, her clear blue eyes examining the framework of the door. Her mouth gapes with concentration. She grasps her fingers round the edge of the door and swings it back and forth. She narrows her eyes and frowns, then gives the door a gentle push. It slams in her face, knocking her to the floor. Her shotgun skids across the room. She sees the door handle move. She rushes to the door and tries the handle. The door is locked.
Mrs. Mills!
Mrs. Mills rushes down the stairs.
What's the matter, ma'am? The key to the music room. Give it to me. Quickly.
What's happening, ma'am?
The woman runs ahead to the music room door and thrusts the key in the lock. Mrs. Mills joins her as the woman turns the key and throws the door wide. The woman clutches at her throat. The piano lid is open. Later in the kitchen.
I checked that room myself.
She sits at the table, staring ahead of her.
It was empty.
Take these tablets, ma'am.
And yet...
They'll do you good.
And yet I felt as if there was someone else there.
Mrs. Mills turns from her with alarm.
And it wasn't human. There is something in this house. Something diabolic.
Ma'am.
Something which is not... Not at rest. I know you don't believe it. You don't believe it, do you? I don't blame you. I used to not believe these things.
I do believe it, ma'am.
Mrs. Mills sits at the table facing the woman.
I've always believed in those things. Oh, they're not easy to explain. But they do happen. We've all heard stories of the beyond, now and then. And I think that sometimes the world of the dead gets mixed up with the world of the living.
But it's impossible. The Lord would never allow such an aberration, the living and the dead. They will only meet at the end of eternity. It says so in the Bible.
Ma'am, there isn't always an answer for everything.
The woman stares at Mrs. Mills, lips parted, eyes moist. She gets up from the table. She gathers her dressing gown round her and leaves. Mrs. Mills watches her with concern. Now the woman is descending the stair to the hall.
Where are you off to, ma'am?
She puts on an overcoat.
I'm going to the village to my father-in-law on a visit. If he won't come here, then I shall go to him. I shall bring him back.
back.
Ma'am, you should wait for the weather improves.
I've waited long enough.
Mrs. Mills follows her out onto the drive.
Mum, the priest told me that...
I don't care what he told you. I want him to tell me personally. He must come today.
But what are you going to tell him?
That we have searched every room in there, inch by inch. And now I need them to be blessed.
By the lake, Mr. Tuttle is piling up dead leaves.
Mr. Tuttle.
Morning, ma'am.
I need you to search the whole garden for gravestones.
Gravestones?
Yes, when my husband bought this house, we were told there was a little cemetery. I think it was somewhere over there, amongst the trees.
I've not seen anything.
Check carefully. It could be overgrown.
Yes, ma'am.
I need to know if there was a family buried here. And if they had a little boy, Victor.
She strides off across the garden, opens a heavy wrought iron gate, and pulling a purple scarf over her head, disappears down a track into the fog. Mr. Tuttle leans on his rake, watching her go. Mrs. Mills joins him.
Now she thinks the house is haunted.
Do you think it's safe to let her go?
Oh, don't worry, the fog won't let her get very far.
Oh, yes, the fog. The fog, of course. And when do you think we should bring all this out into the open?
All in good time, Mr. Tuttle. All in good time. Speaking of which...
She indicates the leaves.
Oh!
He adds a large handful to the pile, hiding the exposed Gothic cross of an old grave. The woman walks briskly along the track, hands in pockets. She comes to an avenue of tall trees, where the track disappears under a carpet of leaves. She strides on between the trees. The fog becomes thicker. She slows to a halt and looks around her. She turns on her heel and moves off in another direction. She's completely lost in the dense fog. She turns back and breaks into a run, wringing her hands, rubbing her finger, trying to warm it. She peers into the fog, trying to make some sense of where she is. The scarf slips from her head and onto her shoulders. She turns again, trips, starts running. She stops, her hair tousled and wild, peers into the grey blankness of the fog with a wide-eyed, desperate expression. At first there's nothing, then a dark shape looms towards her. A man in a greatcoat, dirty, collarless shirt unbuttoned at the neck, strands of lank, fair hair plastered over his forehead. He clutches a kit bag and looks about him as if lost. His intense, staring eyes light on her. He comes to a halt, frowning. Her mouth opens in disbelief. Her hands go to her mouth, then to him. She throws her arms around him, eyes brimming. The kit bag drops from his stiff hands. He stares over her shoulder, still frowning.
You're here. You're here. They said there was no hope. They said I should give you up for dead.
They say a lot of things.
Begging God to bring you back. Bring the children, their father back. Bring him.
Grace steps back to look at him and caresses his face.
But where have you been all this time?
Out there. Looking for my home.
She moves her fingers slowly down his stubbled cheek over his chest. She gazes at his face, strokes his chin.
You're so dear.
Sometimes I bleed.
Grace looks puzzled for a moment, then smiles and hugs him again. They stand motionless under the leafless trees, wrapped in each other's arms. The fog slowly clears. They make their way beyond the wrought iron gate along the drive. Grace caresses his back, her head on his shoulder. He walks unsteadily, leaning his weight against her, his kit bag slung over his other shoulder. As they enter the house, Mrs. Mills is standing in the hall. She goes to meet them, looking at the man.
Ma'am.
He stares back at her, clutching his kit bag in front of him.
Mrs. Mills.
Grace smiles and strokes his hair.
This is my husband.
Mrs. Mills looks confused, then recovers herself.
I'm very pleased to meet you, sir.
He's very weak.
He looks about him dazed as she takes his kit bag and hands it to Mrs. Mills.
I want you to prepare a hot bath and some clean clothes. And something to eat.
Right away, ma'am.
Mrs. Mills looks uneasily at the man and leaves. The man is in the children's bedroom, still in his greatcoat and boots. He walks to the foot of their bed, grasping the brass rail, and gazes at their sleeping faces as they lie snuggled into their pillows. Anne is the first to wake.
How are my little ones?
Her eyes widen with pleasure.
Daddy!
She leaps into his arms. Nicholas stares up sleepily.
Why did you take so long?
Their father smiles down at Nicholas lovingly. He stretches out his hand to him.
Hello, Nicholas.
I told you, see? I told you he'd come back.
Nicholas leaps up and joins his sister. They both hug their father.
Have you both been well behaved?
We've been very good.
Have you been good to your mother?
Very good. We study every day for our first communion. Daddy, did you get anyone?
He stares down at the bed. In the kitchen, Grace and Mrs. Mills are getting food ready.
Oh, here he comes.
Grace goes into the hall and stands at the foot of the stairs.
Darling, we've prepared lunch for you. Are you coming down or would you prefer the...
The bedroom door slams shut. Mrs. Mills comes out into the hallway. Grace turns to face her, then walks back towards the kitchen. Upstairs, Charles is lying in bed in his shirt, staring into space.
When's Daddy coming down?
Be patient, Anne. Daddy is not well.
He said he'd seen a lot of dead men.
Shh. Grace and the children are eating by candlelight at the dining table.
Mummy, when people die in the war, where do they go?
Oh, what a question. It depends.
On what?
Well, on whether they fought on the side of the goodies or the baddies. Your father, for example, fought for England on the side of the goodies.
Anne chews her food and thinks about this.
How do you know who the goodies and the baddies are?
That's enough questions. Eat your food. You'll never go to war.
We'll never go anywhere.
Oh, you're not missing out on anything. You're much better off at home with your mummy and your daddy, who love you very, very much.
And the intruders?
Grace looks up at her sharply.
There are no intruders here.
But you said that there were.
No, I said that there are no intruders here, and I don't want to hear another word on the subject.
That you said...
So that is enough!
Can I say something?
No!
Why not?
Because you can't!
Anne frowns and throws down her fork. She stares intently at the table.
Anne, stop breathing like that. You heard me, stop it. Stop breathing! Right, you go to your room. Go to your room, there's no dessert for you today.
Anne rushes from the room to the kitchen and into the arms of Mrs. Mills.
Oh, no crying now, no crying. Oh, stop that. Oh, look what an awful face you've got when you cry.
I don't care.
There. You listen to me. I've seen them too.
You have?
Yes.
Then why don't you tell my mother? Then maybe she'll believe me.
That thinks your mother doesn't want to hear. She only believes in what she was taught. Don't worry. Sooner or later, she'll see them. Then everything will be different.
How?
Oh, you'll see. There are going to be some big surprises. There are going to be changes.
Changes?
Outside at night, Mr. Tuttle carries an armful of logs into a small outhouse. Mrs. Mills and Lydia sit inside, warming themselves by the flickering light of a fire.
Now she's behaving as if nothing had happened.
He puts the logs down.
What about her daughter?
Oh, she's not so stubborn. The children will be easier to convince. Oh, it's the mother who's going to cause us problems.
Do you think her husband suspects anything?
No. I don't think he even knows where he is.
Daytime. Mr. Tuttle trudges towards the house, pushing a wheelbarrow through the grey mist. In the children's bedroom, Anne and Grace stand before the large mirrored doors of a wardrobe. Anne wears a white communion dress.
Look what a pretty daughter I've got.
Her mother puts a headband with a veil on Anne's head.
Mummy made this veil especially for you.
She shrouds Anne's face with it.
I look like a bride.
She kisses Anne's forehead tenderly through the white gauze of the veil.
Now I need to shorten the sleeves a little. You can take it off now.
No!
Anne, this dress has to be spotless for your first communion.
I promise I won't dirty it. Just let me wear it for a little longer. Just a little.
Oh, just a little. All right. I'll be back shortly.
She goes to the door.
No sitting on the floor and no leaning against the walls.
Grace smiles proudly and leaves. Preoccupied, Grace locks the door behind her and walks off down the passage. Inside the room, Anne admires herself in the mirror, holding out her hand.
Monsieur, would you like to dance?
The room is dark around her white reflection.
I'd love to.
She begins to sway languorously. She swirls the gauzy folds of her dress and veil and dances, spinning around in the darkness. Grace is in her bedroom. Charles is lying on his side in the bed, staring at nothing. Grace lies beside him and caresses his shoulder. His brow is furrowed.
Charles, you can't go on like this. You must eat something.
In the children's bedroom, Anne throws the veil over her head and pretends to be a ghost.
Ooh.
She goes to the corner of the room where there's a toy theatre and picks up a string puppet. Grace is resting her head on her husband's shoulder.
In the sky.
She looks at him.
I don't know if it's cloudy or white.
His eyes stare vacantly.
I only have eyes for you, dear.
She rests her head on his. Anne is now sitting on the floor, gazing through her veil at the string puppet, which she dangles by a lighted candle. She stops for a moment, turning to look in the direction of the door, then continues playing. Grace slowly closes the door of her bedroom, where her husband still lies motionless on the bed. Outside the children's bedroom, she sits, hunched in a chair, hands over her face. She straightens.
Anne, you need to take the dress off now.
She takes the keys from her pocket and looks across at the closed door.
Anne, are you listening to me?
Grace goes to unlock the door.
Anne?
She sees the white-veiled figure dangling the puppet.
What did I tell you about sitting on the floor?
It is clean.
It makes no difference. Why can't you ever do as you're told?
Her expression freezes as she sees that the hand dangling the puppet is gnarled and wrinkled, an old woman's hand. Dumbfounded, Grace circles round the veiled figure, who continues to dangle the puppet playfully by the light of a single candle. Grace can now glimpse the face under the veil. Blank, misty eyes stare up at her.
What's the matter?
Where is my daughter? What have you done with my daughter?
Are you mad? I am your daughter.
Grace lunges at her.
You're not my daughter!
Grace is throttling her, wrinkled arms stretched out to Grace's neck. Grace throws her down.
You're not my daughter! No! No! No!
Grace rips the veil away. Her hands go to her mouth in horror to see that the figure kneeling in front of her is her daughter. Anne scrambles away, distressed. Someone is at the door.
Mum, I heard shouts.
She wants to kill me. She won't stop until she kills us. She won't stop. She won't stop until she kills us.
Come with me. Come with
you. You're wicked. You're wicked, wicked.
Grace trembles with shock. Later, at the kitchen sink, she splashes her face with water. Mrs. Mills comes in and looks somberly at Grace.
How How is she?
There's no calming her. So I left her with her father. She insisted on speaking with him.
Grace nods. Mrs. Mills pours water in a glass.
What happened? Why did you fight?
It wasn't her. It was the old woman. With the strange eyes, she was imitating my daughter's voice. I swear to God that it wasn't my daughter.
Mrs. Mills gives her a penetrating look.
Oh, God. God, help me.
Grace sits at the kitchen table.
God, help me. What's the matter with me?
Mrs. Mills comes to the table.
I don't know what's the matter with me.
She puts down the glass of water.
You must get more rest.
She puts two tablets in front of Grace.
You can't take on the whole responsibility of this house. Leave it to us. We know what has to be done.
Grace looks up at her with an air of suspicion.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean you know what has to be done?
Nothing, ma'am. I was just suggesting...
There's nothing to suggest. Who do you think you are? You have no idea what has to be done.
Mrs. Mills looks at her with embarrassment, then turns away. Grace glances down at the table and sees the tablets laid next to the glass of water.
What are these?
Mrs. Mills turns. She looks at Grace with surprise.
The tablets for your migraine, ma'am.
She holds up a screw-top container.
Ones you always take.
Please, I need to be on my own.
Mrs. Mills nods and leaves.
Yes, ma'am.
Grace picks up the tablets, briefly examines them, and after a moment's thought, grabs a glass of water. She throws tablets and water into the sink. Upstairs, Mrs. Mills brings Anne out of her parents' bedroom and past Grace, who stands at the top of the stairs. Anne ignores her.
Come, child.
Mrs. Mills leads Anne away. Inside the bedroom, Charles is sitting on the edge of the bed in his soldier's open-neck shirt, gazing at the floor. He looks up as Grace comes in and closes the door behind her. She starts to unbutton her dress as she goes to a heavy carved oak wardrobe and swings open its mirrored door. Briefly, it catches a reflection of Charles.
Anne told me everything.
She glances across at him, then eases her dress down over her shoulders and steps out of it. She's wearing a slip.
I wish I had an explanation, but I haven't. First, I thought there was someone else in the house. I even thought that there were ghosts.
I'm not talking about the ghosts. I'm talking about what happened that day.
She stands for a moment, eyes closed, shaking her head, then throws the dress in the wardrobe.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Tell me it's not true. Tell me what happened.
She stands with her back to him.
Happened?
She shakes her head again and fidgets with her hands as he watches her from the bed.
I don't know what came over me that day. The servants had left during the night. They had the courage to tell me to my face. And they knew that I couldn't leave the house. They knew.
In the children's bedroom.
Anne. Anne. What happened?
Anne has tears in her eyes.
She hit me. She went mad like she did that day. Do you remember?
Nicholas screws up his eyes.
No.
In the other bedroom, Grace sits with her back to Charles.
You must forgive me, Charles.
He stares at her.
Not me. The children.
She turns to him.
They know that I love them. They know I'd never hurt them. I'd die first.
He gets up from the bed and moves towards the wide window.
What are you going to do? Are you angry with me?
He picks up his khaki jacket from a chair and grips it tight.
I just came back to say goodbye to my wife and children. Now I must go.
Go where?
Go to the front.
Now the war's over.
She stands.
The war is not over.
What are you talking about?
She moves towards him.
You're not going, do you hear me? You left us once already. You can't go.
He blinks impassive.
Why? Why did you have to go to that stupid war that had nothing to do with us? Why couldn't you have stayed here like the others did? The
others surrendered.
We all surrendered! The whole island was occupied! What did you expect?
She sits on the edge of the bed. She presses a hand to her face and shakes her head.
What were you trying
trying to prove by going to war. Your place was here with us. With your family.
She lies back on the bed, turned away from him, her slip rucked up, revealing her stocking tops.
I loved you. That was enough for me. Living in this darkness. In this prison.
He stands looking at her, holding back tears.
But not for you.
He bows his head, eyes shut.
I wasn't enough for you. That's why you left. It wasn't just the war. You want to leave me, don't you?
She closes her eyes. A shadow moves across the bedside table. He appears at the bed and lies behind her, nuzzling gently between her shoulder blades, kissing the nape of her neck. Her eyes open languorously. She reaches out behind her and cups her palm around the back of his head, turning so that his face is above her. He presses his open lips on hers. A tear rolls across her cheek, glinting in the soft light. She looks into his eyes, her hands caressing his neck. Later, they lie asleep facing each other. The light from the window is brighter. Her hand is resting on the side of his neck, his on her naked shoulder. Now he gazes at her, lifelessly. The light is brighter still. She wakes and sees that he is no longer beside her. She gets up from the bed, throws her dressing gown over her naked body, and goes quickly to the window. She looks out, then drops her head despondently. In her dressing gown and nightdress, she's walking slowly along the drive towards the wrought iron gate, her tousled hair blowing wildly in the wind. Her sad eyes glisten with tears as she grips the bars of the gate and presses her pale forehead against the rusting metal. She looks down at the ground and then out along the tree-lined avenue, which is obscured in mist. Back at the house, the children are in their large bed, asleep on their sides, turned away from the window. The room is bathed in white daylight. Anne awakens and slowly opens her eyes, blinking in the morning light. She turns on her back and looks towards the window. She sits bolt upright. Grace turns from the gate with wide-eyed alarm and runs frantically towards the house. She bursts through the front door and races up the stairs. She throws open their door to see them cowering by the bed, getting away from the light. She rushes to close the curtains but sees they have vanished. Her hand goes to her mouth. She tears off her dressing gown, throws it over them, and ushers them out of the room. There is no blind on the landing skylight. She hurries them down a passage, also filled with daylight, stopping at a door and scrabbling for her keys. She almost drops them in her panic, but finally unlocks the door. The room is full of light, too. The curtains at both windows in the room have gone. They try a bathroom. It's the same, no curtains. At the top of the attic stair, a door slowly opens. Mrs. Mills stares out impassively. In the schoolroom, Grace drags a blackboard across the room and pushes it against the window. The light in the room decreases. She pulls the dressing gown away from the children and takes Anne's face in her hands.
Oh, you're all right. You're all right.
I want my daddy.
Grace stares at Anne at a loss for words. The children look at her distraught.
Daddy's gone.
It's not true.
Nicholas throws himself into her arms.
I love you, Mummy.
She smiles with relief and glances at Anne, stretching out a hand to touch her cheek. Anne flinches away and stares at her mother with hard eyes.
Find the curtains.
Grace bursts into a room where Lydia is dusting.
Who was it? Who did this? Tell me! Tell me!
She shakes Lydia's shoulders.
You know what's happening here. You know because it happened to you too. You tell me. Write it down. Write it down. Please.
That attitude won't solve anything, ma'am. Anyway, she can't write.
Where are they?
What?
The
curtains! The curtains! My children's lives depend on someone has taken the curtains!
I have noticed, ma'am. There's no need for you to raise your voice. Oh, Mr. Tuttle, I was just on the point of calling you. Did you know that someone has taken all the curtains?
He comes into the room.
The curtains? Oh, dear. Why should anyone want to take all the curtains?
Oh, to let some daylight into this house, I imagine.
Daylight? Of course.
Someone wants to kill my children.
Now, why do you think that the daylight would kill them?
Are you mad? I told you. I already told you the children are photosensitive. The light will kill them.
Yes, but that was before. The condition could have cleared up by itself. I mean, if you never expose them to daylight, how do you know they're not cured?
My sister-in-law used to get terrible attacks of rheumatism in her legs and back. Then one fine day, they disappeared.
I am going to find those curtains. And when you have finished helping me hang them, you will leave this house!
She strides into the hall, gets out a key, and unlocks the carved oak chest. She lifts the lid and pulls out the double-barreled shotgun.
And what about the master, ma'am? What has he got to say about all of this?
They've all come into the hall.
Give me your keys.
Grace stretches out a hand for them.
I want your keys now.
They stand on the other side of the hall looking at her. Grace moves back a step.
I know what you want. You want to frighten us. You want to get us out, me and my children. You've wanted to take over this house ever since the first day you arrived. Now you give me those keys. I will not ask again.
You should try and calm down, ma'am.
Give me the keys!
She points the shotgun at them.
Give them to me.
They continue to look at her. Mrs. Mills holds out a bunch of keys. Grace snatches them.
And now get out of here.
Mr. Tuttle and Lydia glance towards Mrs. Mills, who nods. They walk in line towards the front door. Looking scared but determined, Grace continues to point the shotgun at them. The three servants stand outside in the mist.
Something, Mr. Tuttle. I think I've reached the end of my tether. What about you?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
We'd better go and uncover the gravestones.
Inside the house, Grace frantically knocks furnishings to the floor, pulls open a cupboard, drags out boxes and cushions. In another room, she sweeps the contents off shelves and hauls a wardrobe away from a wall to look behind it. She races up two flights of stairs, shotgun in one hand, oil lamp in the other. She strides along a dark passageway, props the shotgun against the wall and inserts a key in a door. Below, in the children's bedroom, Anne and Nicholas are sitting in their nightclothes at a desk. Anne is drawing. Nicholas looks at the ceiling.
What's Mummy doing?
I've already told you, she's gone mad.
Liar.
She's gone mad.
Liar.
She's gone mad. She's gone mad. She's gone mad.
Nicholas grabs Anne's drawing, scrunching it, glaring fiercely at her. She looks at him sullenly, then checks a clock on the desk.
My time.
She opens the window shutters.
Where are you going?
I've had enough. Going to the woods to look for Daddy.
Are you going to run away?
She opens the window, climbs onto the sill and peers down.
If I hang on to the pipe, I can climb down to the ground. It's very easy.
She turns and clambers out, carefully finding her footing and descending out of sight. Nicholas watches her with incredulity. He runs to the open window and makes out the white shape of her nightgown in the mist as she climbs down the drain pipe.
If Mummy finds out, you're in for it. Yes.
She continues her careful descent. Nicholas looks on anxiously, leaning out of the window. Nearing the ground, she leaps the last few feet and starts running.
Wait.
She stops and looks up at him.
Want to come and look for Daddy too? Liar. You just don't want to be left on your own. Scaredy pants, scaredy pants.
Be quiet!
She stands motionless, gazing up at the bedroom window, as Nicholas hauls himself out onto the sloping stone of the sill and slides precariously down the wall until he is perched on the stone ledge. He edges his way along the ledge, clinging to the wall for support, until he stands above the drainpipe. Anne smiles up at him with glowing approval. Grace re-emerges into the passage. She picks up the shotgun and starts to walk further into the gloom. She stops, the lamp she's carrying lighting up her pale face. Her eyes search the darkness in front of her. She turns back and peers up narrow attic stairs. At the top is the door to Mrs. Mills' room. Outside, the two children walk through misty darkness.
Anne, I think you've got lost. We still haven't left the garden yet, silly. I'm scared. You shouldn't have come then.
They trudge on. Nicholas takes his sister's hand.
Say something. What shall I say? I don't know. Anything. Let's see. My name's Anne and I'm walking. I'm walking and my name is Anne.
Grace makes her way up the attic stairs, the oil lamp casting the only light. She pushes the door open. She walks into the room, peering around with alert eyes. Her oil lamp illuminates two single beds and between them a bedside cabinet. Outside, Nicholas halts and points at three oblong shapes under a gnarled tree.
What's that over there?
The central oblong bears a Gothic cross.
I think they're graves.
Anne starts to run towards them.
Don't go near!
Why not?
What if a ghost jumps out?
Graves don't have ghosts, only skeletons.
She runs off again. In the attic, Grace has ransacked the room. She picks up a crumpled sheet and throws it down despairingly. She turns and notices something. Sticking out from under a mattress is a rectangular piece of cardboard. By the gravestone with the cross, Anne kneels.
There's something written here.
Let's go.
Wait!
She rubs at the stone. In the attic, Grace reaches for the cardboard. It's the back of an old photograph with an inscription, December 1891. She looks at the photograph. Three people propped on a sofa, seemingly asleep. Grace puts her hand to her mouth as she recognises them. Mr. Tuttle, Mrs. Mills and Lydia. Anne is staring at the gravestone. Bertha Mills, 1829 to 1891. Anne turns to Nicholas. She sees something and points. He turns. The three servants are coming their way.
Must be strong now, children.
Nicholas, come here! Mrs. Mills, please don't tell Mummy we've run away. Don't speak to them! Why? They're dead! What? They're ghosts! Please come here!
Grace enters their bedroom. She sees it empty. The servants are closing in on Nicholas.
The ghosts! Why aren't they wearing sheets and clanking chains? You said that.
I don't care what I said! Get away from them!
You're always teasing me and telling lies. And I'm sick of it!
I'm not teasing you! I'm telling the truth! Come here!
He turns to see them just a few feet away. He bolts towards his sister. They race off into the mist. Grace bursts out of the house, brandishing her shotgun, and dashes across the garden. She sees the children sprinting towards her.
Run! Run! Run!
They rush past and make for the house. She turns and lifts the shotgun.
Don't come any closer! Don't move!
The three servants walk steadily forward. They keep on coming.
Don't trouble yourself, man. Tuberculosis finished us off. More than half a century ago.
Grace drops the shotgun and runs towards the house. She enters the hall through a French window and locks it. Anne and Nicholas watch through the banisters. Grace stares out through the quarter panes of the French window, then backs away into the hall as the three servants approach.
Go away!
Their faces are at the glass, peering in. They try the door.
Open the door, ma'am. Please.
What do you want?
Don't open the door.
Don't.
I've seen their graves.
Go upstairs and hide. Go on.
I'm scared.
Nicholas hugs his mother. Anne remains seated on the step for a moment, looking at them. Then she too throws herself into her mother's arms.
Separate.
Grace beams and grasps her daughter's head.
What have you two done? Separate.
She kisses Anne. Then Nicholas. They race up the stairs.
We've been trying to make you understand.
Grace leaps back. The voice is closed, but Mrs. Mills is still outside.
Understand what?
About the house. About the new situation.
What situation?
We must all learn to live together. The living and the dead.
If you're dead, leave us in peace. Leave us in peace!
children hurry into their bedroom. Nicholas slams the door behind him. Anne runs towards the wardrobe.
In here. Get inside.
She opens the mirrored door and scrambles in after Nicholas, closing the door behind her.
And suppose we do leave you. Do you think they will?
Grace cowers on the stairs.
Who?
The intruders.
There are no intruders.
They took the curtains down.
There are no intruders.
Oh, yes, I assure you it was them. And now they're in there with you and the children.
Waiting for you.
No!
Yes. And believe me, sooner or later, they'll find you.
Inside the wardrobe.
Listen, we're dear and I'll be back in a minute. Mommy said we shouldn't separate.
I can't leave her on her own. Stop breathing like that.
Nicholas looks down and concentrates. Anne looks towards the crack in the wardrobe door where light is coming in. She frowns.
Stop breathing like that. Stop breathing!
She covers his mouth. Her face is half lit from the crack in the door.
Can't you hear it? There's someone there.
She starts to shiver.
Come with us, children. Come with us.
A face at the door. An old woman with misty blank eyes. Grace peers up from the stairs, petrified and helpless.
Nicholas? Where are you? Answer me!
The intruders have found them.
There's nothing we can do now.
You'll have to go upstairs and talk to them.
Grace stands motionless, looking at the three servants, who peer in at her through the window. Terrified, she backs away and fumbles in her pocket. She pulls out the rosary and runs it through her fingers as she climbs the stairs, step by slow step.
Oh, Father. Oh, I don't know. I'll be there. I can go. I won't be done alone. I just don't know. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our troubles.
She edges towards the door of the children's room.
Why are you afraid, children? Why don't you want us to be your friends?
Come on, speak to me. Speak.
Grace reaches out for the handle and slowly pushes the door open.
Tell me what happened.
Three men and two women are sitting around a table.
Don't tell her! Don't tell her!
Don't. Tell her.
If I tell her, they'll leave us in peace.
The old woman is scribbling on paper, blank eyes rolling.
Mummy!
A man to her left deciphers the scrawl.
Mummy.
Why are you crying, children? What happened in this room? What did your mother do to you?
Grace looks on horrified as Anne whispers in the old woman's ear. The old woman scribbles. The man takes a sheet of paper and looks up at the others around the table.
Something about a pillow.
Is that how she killed you?
Anne looks startled. So does Grace.
With a pillow?
She didn't kill us.
Children, if you're dead, why do you remain in this house?
We're not dead.
Why do you remain in this
house? We're not dead. Not dead. We're not dead. We're not dead. We're not dead.
Why do you remain?
Grace shakes the table violently.
We're not dead. We're not.
The intruders cannot see her. She rips up the papers. The intruders see only the pieces falling around them. There is no sign of Grace or her children. The old woman gazes sightlessly through the cataracts of her blank eyes. She closes them and lowers her head. A man to her right talks to her.
Are you all right?
Yes. Just a bit dizzy, that's all. What happened?
They made contact.
All three?
Apparently, yes. The mother and the two children.
A younger, dark-haired woman sits opposite them.
Quite interesting, don't you think?
Interesting? Well, I was scared out of my wits.
Darling, calm down.
No. Now, so far, we have handled this matter your way. But now you listen to me. We can't possibly stay in this house any longer. It is quite clear that these beings do not want us to live here.
We don't know anything about them yet.
Yes, we do. We know the woman went mad, smothered her two children, and then shot herself. That's quite enough. Think of our son.
There's nothing wrong with Victor.
Yes, there is. He has nightmares. He says he has seen that girl, and even this lady has been possessed by her. Please, let us leave this house.
All right. We will leave tomorrow morning.
Oh, thank God for that. I'll just go and check on Victor.
She gets up and leaves the room. Her husband puts his jacket on.
Once again, thank you so much for coming.
Pleasure. I hope we've been of some help.
Oh, yes, of course. But I must admit...
The table and the intruders fade away, leaving the children's room empty and dark.
At first, I couldn't understand what the pillow was doing in my hands.
Grace is sitting outside the room, her back against the wall.
Why you didn't move?
Anne and Nicholas are cradled in her arms as she stares in front of her. Nestles her cheek against Anne's head.
Be strong. Be a good mother. For them.
She shuts her eyes and shakes her head.
But now...
Her eyes open and she glances around her.
How?
She caresses Nicholas's head. Mrs. Mills is standing at the end of the passage.
Young Lydia said the very same thing when she realized the three of us were dead. And that was the last time she ever spoke. But I couldn't tell you that before now.
Grace gazes at her with a soft look of compassion.
Shall I make us a nice cup of tea, ma'am?
Grace smiles briefly and gives a slight nod.
Intruders are leaving, but others will come. Now, sometimes we'll sense them, other times we won't. But that's the way it's always been.
Mrs. Mills gives a gracious smile and inclines her head.
Ma'am.
She turns and walks away down the passage. Grace gazes after her. Grace has tears in her eyes.
I don't know if there even is a limbo. I'm no wiser than you are.
She cradles her cheek against Anne's head and closes her eyes.
But I do know that I love you. I've always loved you. And this house is ours. You say with me. This house is ours.
Early morning light pours through the curtainless windows and fills every room of the house. Still in her white nightdress, Anne stands barefoot by a large upstairs window and twirls in sunlight. She turns and strokes her face. Nicholas holds up his hand to the light, palm outwards. Anne smiles at him. Grace puts her arm around them both and stares into the light. From outside, they can be seen at the window, the pale young woman and the two children with their arms wrapped around her. Then the image fades. The window is empty. Down below in the drive, a young boy stands stock still, staring up at the window. The young woman from the séance emerges, smartly dressed, from the front entrance and gets into a waiting car. Her husband follows her out, glances up at the empty window and pats the boy's shoulder.
Come along, Victor.
As the car drives away, the boy peers out of the back window at the house. The car slows down to pass through the wrought iron gates, which are held open by a man in a brown jacket and trilby hat, who's been fixing a sign to the metal bars. He waves at the car as it passes and shuts and padlocks the gates. The sign reads, "For sale."